Lincoln.edu.
And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. Hi, I'm Mary Glennie.
And I'm Arlene Engelhardt, and you are listening to From a Woman's Point of View. We hope you had a wonderful holiday, whatever it is that you celebrate, and that you're continuing to enjoy the holidays, and maybe just a little break from all of the chaos around us. But whatever it is, we're going to take a look back at the year today, and then we'll be moving on into 2019.
Well, first I'm just going to do this little station biz, and then we will continue.
Hi, this is WMNF General Manager Craig Kopp. I don't know about you, but I always seem to have mixed feelings about the end of the year. Sure, there's the prospect of a shiny new year ahead full of opportunities and challenges, but there's always that nagging feeling that I could have accomplished more in the year about to end. You can ease some of that unfinished business angst by making a contribution to WMNF's end-of-year campaign, ensuring the last local radio in Tampa Bay is there for you and everybody else who needs it in 2019. Make your contribution now at WMNF.org or call weekdays during business hours, 813-238-8001. And thanks.
Yes, indeed, thanks. As Arlene said, it's going to kind of be a year-end wrap-up. And part of that wrap-up actually was, I'm hoping you were listening to Amy Goodman and her tribute to RBG, the only one, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and all she has done for women. And luckily, she's out of the hospital, and we can only hope that she has a very speedy and a wonderful recovery. And yes, so we're going to be looking back at some of the events of this year, particularly relating to women. But I'm thinking of RBG and how hard she fought for women, and so much of it kind of boiled down to this, and you know, that we think of the issues, but we also think of some of the people, and we were really sorry that we lost Aretha Franklin, a fabulous woman who in her own way also battled for women, their rights, etc., and African-American women. I mean, just, and luckily with Aretha, we have all of her music, and so we're going to be threading some Aretha music during the day, and thinking of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and may she live to be 300 years old. Oh, my word, we need her. And, you know, that's so many efforts right now are being made, and it's kind of been quietly, but an awful lot of people are trying to get some of Scalia's dissenting arguments made into laws. So keep your eye on that, because Scalia had some pretty interesting dissents through his career, and there is a lot of effort, and there's already been some legislative proposals that some of his dissents they want to turn into law. So anyway, but Ruth Bader Ginsburg, totally different, and I'm going to combine Aretha and RBG and all of the women we're going to be honoring today, so many of them young women, because I am so glad that when these times are this urgent, and they are this urgent, and kind of, I say this with great reservations, but kind of lucky, actually, that we have Donald Trump, because his audacious inadequacy to his role is so stunning and so dangerous that I think it has put everybody on alert. And so I think we saw it in the blue wave, so many women being elected to office, but also in so many young people. Yes, I think they would have been fighting for the environment and fighting against arms, etc. But certainly it didn't hurt to have the avatar, you might say, of the inappropriate, incapable leadership that we have to fight against. And so I'm going to, Arlene, you look like you're dying to say something. Oh, okay. Then I am going to put this on by the late great Aretha, and this is what we're fighting for. And I thought we'd put her accompanied by the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. And so this is what we're battling for.
Just let it go.
Aretha can totally outshine the Royal Philharmonic. And, you know, thinking back to Ruth Bader Ginsburg and also Scalia, if you will, that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, brilliant, but very also practical. And the interesting thing is so many of the battles she really fought for women occurred even before she got on the court, and they were doing a very nice summary of her career. And it's amazing to me that it took that long for people to realize there could be discrimination and that women had a right to expect certain fairness and respect at a workplace and wages, et cetera. And so often in this year we're looking, and again, I'm thinking of Scalia also. And, you know, sometimes when you make decisions and the majority of your colleagues disagree with you, sometimes you're just wrong. Sometimes you're just out of rhythm. But there you've got the efforts to, you might say, stain to it some of his opinions. But there you had with Ruth Bader Ginsburg fighting, actually, for that, which is so obvious. And yet it wasn't obvious that too often. And looking at right now, you know, that this is a year when, it's a time of year when everybody is thinking of the favorites, you know, the favorite songs, the favorite movies, and all of that kind of stuff. And which is good, that's fine. Except particularly, I hope you, I'm quite a film buff. I really love films, and I really like Manolia Dargis's reviews many times. She's terrific. She writes for the New York Times. And she did a really fine expose of the things that she's learned about women in movies. But she did a prelude to that, and she was saying, you know, that actually really early films were done by women. You know, it was just a newfangled gadget, and it really wasn't, you know, looked upon all that seriously, and, you know, there weren't talkies, and it was kind of uneven, et cetera, but it quickly became the thing. And Manolia was saying that actually that she was looking back in retrospect of some of the really great early filmmakers, and this is after talkies, and how different, really, so many of them approach movies. And she says more and more as she sees movies, she's realizing that, yeah, there are still some really great movies and just wonderful roles. But she's more and more aware that I have become too, that something is missing. There's something missing in the movies. And it's women. It's women's lives. It's their tremendous complexity. It's all of their roles, all of their depth. And also the directors. And I know every year I support Women Make Movies, and they have women directors, etc. And every year, and this has been going on now for the last 10, 12 years, they're talking about the poor opportunities they have. And even with the top women filmmakers, one of the things, probably all of them said the same thing. And I found this interesting. You can be an absolutely top female director, or Kathryn Bigelow, or someone like that. And they said, after your movie, no matter how terrific it was and how successful it was, you go back to zero. They said, where the men, you know, you do a really good film, you can make out a couple clunkers, and it doesn't matter, you'll still get your financing. But not a woman. You go back to zero, and you start over. And it's all about money. And so anyway, just with that in mind, look around in your lives. And whether it's movies, or I'm glad to say with the Grammys this year, a lot more women are up, but I think part of it's from the Me Too movement. And I think you're more and more going to find, particularly for a woman, that where are you? Where is your face? Where are your values? And I'm sorry to say that particularly in aspects of culture, women are sadly missing, and we have to change that. And one thing I was really glad for, in a few minutes we're going to be going into it, so much of our summer was spent following Christine Blasey Ford and Kavanaugh. And, you know, that we all know how that resulted, and we will see how that will play out over the years. But Sports Illustrated, I really have to congratulate them, because in their end-of-the-year awards, and for the most inspirational athlete of the year, they gave it to a very, very deserving Olympic gymnast, probably not as famous as Simone Biles and Gabby Douglas and some of the others, but Rachel Denhollander. And they chose Christine Blasey Ford to actually give the presentation or to introduce Rachel Denhollander at their awards ceremony. And after the terrible events of the summer and the Kavanaugh hearings, Christine Blasey Ford is still getting death threats, and she's having a rough time, she and her family, of trying to get any normalcy in their lives. And so it's the first public, so to speak, appearance. But even then, she didn't come in person. That actually, she came and she did it as a video. And so let's listen to a little bit of Christine Blasey Ford talking to and introducing Rachel Denhollander.
I am honored to speak with you from afar about a woman I admire so much. A woman who suffered abuse as a vulnerable teenage athlete, who found the courage to talk publicly to stop the abuse of others. Her courage inspired other survivors to end their silence, and we all know the result. Rachel Denhollander, I am in awe of you, and I will always be inspired by you. In stepping forward, you took a huge risk. And you galvanized future generations to come forward, even when the odds are seemingly stacked against them. The lasting lesson is that we all have the power to create real change, and we cannot allow ourselves to be defined by the acts of others. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome this year's Sports Illustrated Inspiration of the Year, Rachel Denhollander.
And then Rachel got up and accepted her award. And again, congratulations to Sports Illustrated, because I don't know about you, but I am sick to death of hearing how Kavanaugh was so terribly treated and all the terrible things that happened to Brett Kavanaugh. And there, Christine Blasey Ford's having trouble getting her life and her family's life back together. And mentioning Rachel Denhollander, if you remember very early in the year, that actually the information finally came out publicly, even though Rachel was an Olympic gymnast, that good. And she had injuries, so she made the team, but she didn't actually perform at the Olympics. She was one of the substitutes in case there was injuries. But Rachel is one of the very first that formally spoke out against him. And Rachel's case was really interesting because I don't know if you follow Larry Nassar in Michigan State, just a terrible sexual abuse there. And before it was all over, I lost count at 450 athletes. I wasn't just the members of the Olympic gymnastic teams for years, but also the Michigan State athletics, so many, mainly women. I don't think he assaulted any men or young boys, but it was the gymnasts, but the softball team, the swimmers, the basketball players, etc. And these are young women. And I think the really sad thing about Rachel Denhollander is that, as so often, Larry Nassar was really a first-class predator. And so often, he would have their mothers in the room with them when he was examining them or treating them, etc. But you have to realize, they'd be sitting in a chair, and he'd have his back to them. And they wouldn't know. They didn't know. He was a chiropractor. He was a medical professional. They thought he was not doing anything adverse. And you have to realize that Rachel and others, they are 14, 15, maybe not even quite that old, but they're very young women. And Rachel said as she more and more that he would do these treatments, she got more and more uncomfortable. And the thing that was interesting and so tragic is that before she finally came out against Larry Nassar and actually made the first reporting, because I think she reported first against him in like 98 or 99, she said something to her mother, and she said, "Why didn't you say something?" And her mother had no idea, and Rachel realized that she really was holding, she really had some really bad feelings and misunderstandings about her mother, because her mother would allow this to happen, and her mother didn't know. And this is the predation these young girls went through, that many times their mothers would be in the room with them, but they really wouldn't know what was happening. And, you know, and kudos to the gymnastic teams, because then when Rachel Denhollander spoke out, she was ignored, you know, that they were belittled, et cetera. And actually, even up till the 2015, that when she formally testified, and we're going to hear a little bit of her testimony that she did actually in court, that they had other women outside that were saying, oh, no, he was a wonderful doctor, none of this happened. But luckily, we're talking Olympic gymnasts here, and when you can do the kind of things that they do on the balance beam and the floor in front of a world audience, these are tough young women. And Allie Reisman and others said, oh, no, she's absolutely right. It happened to us, too. And then the dam broke. And so, but Rachel Denhollander absolutely deserved that award, as do particularly Simone Biles, our fabulous current Olympic gymnast, who is just kind of in her own class. And she has continued the fight and has gone after the coaches, has gone after the Olympic Gymnastics Federation, and has gotten them all fired. And so they really have to almost go through the gymnasts right now, because the young women don't trust them. And it's tragic that it's reached that level, but it also is a tribute to them that they are that tough. And so let's hear Rachel, and this is actually part of her testimony when she was actually going after Nassar in court. And you'll hear at the very end, and what she's referring to are these other women who came forward to say, oh no, none of this happened. And so let's listen to, and right now, actually, Rachel Denhollander is an attorney, and she's, I think now has 5 children. When she was actually testifying against Nassar, she was pregnant, but I'm pretty sure she has 5 children now. She's done very, very well, but anyway, Rachel Denhollander.
An indetermined sexual predator. I know this firsthand. His ability to gain my trust and the trust of my parents, his grooming and carefully calculated brazen sexual assault was the result of deliberate, premeditated, intentional, and methodological patterns of abuse, patterns that were rehearsed long before I walked through Larry's exam room door, and which continued to be perpetrated, I believe, on a daily basis for 16 more years until I filed the police report. And while Larry is unlikely to live past his federal sentence, he is not the only predator out there. And this sentence will send a message about how seriously abuse will be taken. So I ask, how much is a little girl worth? How much priority should be placed on communicating that the fullest weight of the law will be used to protect another innocent child from the soul-shattering devastation that sexual assault brings? Larry meticulously groomed me for the purpose of exploiting me for his sexual gain. He penetrated me, he groped me, he fondled me, and then he whispered questions about how it felt. He engaged in degrading and humiliating sex acts without my consent or permission. And Larry enjoyed it. Larry sought out and took pleasure in little girls and women being sexually injured and violated. MSU. We have been telling our stories for more than 18 months, and you have yet to answer a single question I have asked. Every time I repeat these facts about the number of women who reported to employees at MSU and were silenced, you respond the exact same way. You issue a press statement saying there was no cover-up because no one who heard the reports of assault believed that Larry was committing abuse. You play word games saying you didn't know because no one believed. I know that. And the reason everyone who heard about Larry's abuse did not believe it is because they did not listen. They did not listen in 1997 or 1998 or 1999 or 2000 or 2004 or 2014. No one knew, according to your definition of no, because no one handled the reports of abuse properly. Victims were silenced, intimidated, repeatedly told it was medical treatment, and even forced to go back for continued sexual assault. I was subjected to lies and attacks on my character, including very publicly by attorney Shannon Smith when I testified under oath. I was being attacked for wanting fame and attention, for making up a story to try to get money. And, Your Honor, since these attacks were made on my character very publicly, on public record, I would like to take an opportunity briefly now to correct them.
You may proceed.
Thank you. Out of the 2 women in question that day, Ms. Smith and I, who were attempting to communicate through either questions or answers, I would like to note that only one of us was taking pictures of the courtroom on her cell phone. Only one of us posed for the press and said, quote, I feel like I should say cheese. And out of the two of us, only one of us was making money off her court appearance that day.
Ooh, that kind of says it all, doesn't it? It all comes down to money, and some people will say anything for just a little bit of money. Let's go back to Aretha again.
Change, change, change.
Aretha Franklin, the great one. So lucky, but anyway, that I think the sad thing of it is, I don't know about you, but every time I see Jim Jordan, the guy that may be now the minority leader in the House, with Nancy Pelosi, you know, very shortly to become the majority leader, and the incidents at Ohio State, and I think of Penn State, and still the reverence for Joe Paterno, and we look at pedophilia. But the Olympic gymnasts, and certainly they did change the rules and change the reporting and change. Hopefully they have made a lot of changes, but I think that it ties in, I think, unfortunately, to an awful lot of sexual aggression we have. But that'll be for a different topic, a different day. And again, you're listening to WMNF Tampa, and this is just kind of a year review of issues, particularly of importance to women, and then also honoring some we have lost, you know, like Aretha Franklin, but also Pam Wiener, and that I hope you caught. I know, Arlene, you saw a lot of the pictures that John did, what, the 12 Days of Christmas?
And actually, he did 15 Days.
Oh, sorry, right, 15. And there were some really great pictures, and it was nice, and she will be remembered. She had an awful lot of effect on a lot of people, and also I'm thinking of Eve Plues, and she was just, I think, just such a marvelous attribute to M&F, and so we're thinking of those people today, too. But back to Christine. Go ahead, Arlene.
And they represent, in some ways, both aspects of the station, Eve in public affairs, and Pam more in the music side. And we, most of us, I think most of our listeners, value both.
Okay, well, I'm going to put on what occupied most of the summer. And, well, what can I say? Let's just give a listen to some of the hearings, a little bit of the highlights from Christine Blasey Ford and Brett Kavanaugh.
Answers, and I don't remember as much as I would like to. But the details that about that night that bring me here today are the ones I will never forget. They have been seared into my memory and have haunted me episodically as an adult. I was pushed onto the bed and Brett got on top of me. He began running his hands over my body and grinding into me. I yelled, hoping that someone downstairs might hear me.
and I tried to get away from him, but his weight was heavy. Brett groped me and tried to take off my clothes. He had a hard time because he was very inebriated and because I was wearing a one-piece bathing suit underneath my clothing. I believed he was going to rape me. I tried to yell for help. When I did, Brett put his hand over my mouth to stop me from yelling. This is what terrified me the most and has had the most lasting impact on my life. It was hard for me to breathe, and I thought that Brett was accidentally going to kill me. Both Brett and Mark were drunkenly laughing during the attack.
I categorically and unequivocally deny the allegation against me by Dr. Ford. I never had any sexual or physical encounter of any kind with Dr. Ford. Listen to the people I know. Listen to the people who have known me my whole life. Listen to the people I've grown up with and worked with and played with and coached with and dated and taught and gone to games with and had beers with. This has destroyed my family and my good name. A good name built up through decades of very hard work and public service at the highest levels of the American government. This whole two-week effort has been a calculated and orchestrated political hit, fueled with apparent pent-up anger about President Trump and the 2016 election, fear that has been unfairly stoked about my judicial record, revenge on behalf of the Clintons, and millions of dollars in money from outside left-wing opposition groups. This is a circus.
And let's go back to the incident. What is the strongest memory you have?
Indelible in the hippocampus is the laughter, the uproarious laughter between the two, and they're having fun at my expense.
I'm not questioning that Dr. Ford may have been sexually assaulted by some person in some place at some time. But I have never done this to her or to anyone.
How did you know Brett Kavanaugh and Mark Judge? And is it possible that you would mix them up with somebody else?
No, it is not.
If you're very confident of your position, and you appear to be, why aren't you also asking the FBI to investigate these claims?
Senator, I'll do whatever the committee wants. I wanted a hearing the day after the allegation came up. I wanted to be here that day. Instead, 10 days passed where all this nonsense is coming out.
The notes from your therapy sessions were created long before this nomination and corroborate what you have said today. You have passed a polygraph and submitted the results to this committee. Judge Kavanaugh has not. You have called for outside witnesses to testify and for expert witnesses to testify. Judge Kavanaugh has not. But most importantly, you have called for an independent FBI investigation into the facts. Judge Kavanaugh has not.
Did you meet with Senator Dianne Feinstein on August 20th?
I did meet with Senator Feinstein.
Did you know that her staff had already recommended a lawyer to Dr. Ford?
I did not know that.
Did you know that her and her staff had this allegations for over 20 days?
I did not know that at the time.
If you wanted an FBI investigation, you could have come to us. What you want to do is destroy this guy's life, hold this seat open, and hope you win in 2020. You said that, not me.
It's a hard life out there for women. Well, I think this should play, but I'm not sure it's going to play.
Thank you.
are the problem here. There is a lot of anger, all kinds of anger, simmering anger, explosive anger. And I think some of the most effective use of pain and anger I heard, and I've heard in a very long time, were the students at Parkland. And I thought young Emma Gonzalez gave one of the most powerful speeches after the death of her colleagues, very good friends. And in it, she has so much wisdom, and she's not afraid to tell it like it is. And so that was earlier this year. Let's listen to some of Emma Gonzalez. And she and David Hogg took so much criticism. And, oh, my goodness, she was so attacked by the far right, both of them, and called all kinds of things. And I remember that Laura Ingraham was saying, oh, David Hogg couldn't get into these three schools in California. But I noticed he's got accepted, and he's going to Harvard. And I imagine Harvard's a pretty good school. But anyway, let's listen to the speech actually Emma gave at the memorial service. Actually, memoriam very shortly after the terrible shootings down in Parkland.
Here today, all these people should be at home grieving. But instead, we are up here, standing together, because if all our government and president can do is send thoughts and prayers, then it's time for victims to be the change that we need to see. And since they added the Second Amendment to the Constitution, our guns have developed at a rate that leaves me dizzy. The guns have changed and the laws have not. We certainly do not understand why it should be harder to make plans with friends on weekends than it is to buy an automatic or semi-automatic weapon. In Florida, to buy a gun, you do not need a permit, you do not need a gun license, and once you buy it, you do not need to register it. You do not need a permit to carry a concealed rifle or shotgun. You can buy as many guns as you want at one time. I read something very powerful to me today. It was from the point of view of a teacher, and I quote, "When adults tell me I have the right to own a gun, all I can hear is, my right to own a gun outweighs your students' right to live. All I can hear is mine, 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 mine." Instead of worrying about our AP Gov Chapter 16 test, we have to be studying our notes to make sure that our arguments based on politics and political history are watertight. The students of this school have been having debates on guns for what feels like our entire lives. AP Gov had about 3 debates this year. Some discussions on the subject even occurred during the shooting while students were hiding in the closets. The people involved right now, those who were there, those posting, those tweeting, those doing interviews and talking to people, are being listened to for what feels like the very first time about this topic that has come up over 1,000 times in the past 4 years alone. I found out today that there's a website called shootingtracker.com. Nothing in the title suggests that it is exclusively tracking the USA's shootings, and yet, does it need to address that? Because Australia had one mass shooting in 1999 in Port Arthur massacre, introduced gun safety, and they haven't had one since. Never had a mass shooting. Canada has had 3, and the UK had 1, and they both introduced gun control, and yet here we are with websites dedicated to reporting these tragedies so that they can be formulated into statistics at your convenience. I watched an interview this morning and noticed that one of the questions was, do you think your children will have to go through other school shooter drills? And our response is that our neighbors will not have to go through other school shooter drills when we have had our say with the government, and maybe the adults have gotten used to saying it is what it is. But if us students have learned anything, it's that if you don't study, you will fail. And in this case, if you actively do nothing, people continually end up dead. So it's time to start doing something. That you read about in textbooks. Not because we are going to be another statistic about mass shootings in America, but because, just as David said, we are going to be the last mass shooting. like Tinker v. Des Moines, we are going to change the law. That's going to be Marjorie Stoneman Douglas in that textbook, and it's all going to be due to the tireless effort of the school board, the faculty members, the family members, and most importantly, the students. The students. The students who are dead, the students still in the hospital, the students who are now suffering from PTSD, the students who had panic attacks during the vigil because the helicopters who wouldn't leave us alone, hovering over the school 24 hours a day. There has been one tweet that I would like to call attention to. So many signs that the Florida shooter was mentally disturbed, even expelled for bad and erratic behavior. Neighbors and classmates knew he was a big problem, must always report such instances to authorities again and again. We did, time and time again. Since he was in middle school, it was no surprise to anyone who knew him to hear that he was the shooter. Those talking about how we should have not ostracized him, you didn't know this kid! Okay, we did. We know that they're claiming that there are mental health issues, and I am not a psychologist, but we need to pay attention to the fact that this isn't just a mental health issue. He wouldn't have harmed that many students with a knife. How about we stop blaming the victims for something that was the shooter's fault? In the first place, those at the gun shows, the people who encouraged him to buy accessories for his guns to make them fully automatic, the people who didn't take them away from him when they knew that he expressed homicidal tendencies. And I am not talking about the FBI. I am talking about the people that he lived with. I'm talking about the neighbors who saw him outside holding guns. If the president wants to come up to me and tell me to my face that it was a terrible tragedy and how it should never have happened and maintain telling us how nothing is going to be done about it, I'm going to happily ask him how much money he received from the National Rifle Association. Being $5,800. Is that how much these people are worth to you, Trump? If you don't do anything to prevent this from continuing to occur, that number of gunshot victims will go up and the number that they are worth will go down. And we will be worthless to you. To every politician who is taking donations from the NRA, shame on you. Choose us, and if you answered us, will you act like it for once? You know what would be a good way to act like it? I have an example of how not to act like it. In February of 2017, 1 year ago, President Trump repealed an Obama-era regulation that would have made it easier to block the sale of firearms to people with certain mental illnesses. From the interactions that I had had with the shooter, before the shooting and the information that I currently know about him, I don't really know if he was mentally ill, but I wrote this before I heard what Delaney said. Delaney said that he was diagnosed. I don't need a psychologist, and I don't need to be a psychologist to know that repealing that regulation was a really dumb idea. Yeah. Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa was the sole sponsor on this bill that stops the FBI from performing background checks on people adjudicated to be mentally ill, and now he's stating for the record, well, it's a shame that the FBI isn't doing background checks on these mentally ill people. Well, duh, you took that opportunity away last year. The people in the government who are voted into power are lying to us, and us kids seem to be the only ones who notice and are prepared to call BS. Companies trying to make caricatures of the teenagers nowadays, saying that all we are is self-involved and trend-obsessed, and they hush us into submissions when our message doesn't reach the ears of the nation, we are prepared to call BS. Politicians who sit in their gilded House and Senate seats funded by the NRA telling us nothing could have ever been done to prevent this, we call BS. They say that tougher gun laws do not decrease gun violence. We call BS! They say a good guy with a gun stops a bad guy with a gun. We call BS! They say guns are just tools like knives and are as dangerous as cars. We call BS! No, they say that no laws could have been able to prevent the hundreds of senseless tragedies that have occurred. We call BS! That us kids don't know what we're talking about, that we're too young to understand how the government works. We call BS! If you agree, register to vote. Contact your local congresspeople. Give them a piece of your mind.
Oh, and if you remember, we also talked to two outstanding young women in our area, Plant High School, Brooke Shapiro, who I believe now is at Yale, and also Macy Lavender, also fighting against gun control. But we could also add two innocent victims that have died in our chain cages. And what is that about? Do we need the young people to stand up and scream against that, too? Anyway, I'm going to go with Aretha here. We need a little prayer. Oh, and Arlene, go right ahead.
Yes, we've also had some calls about those two children that have died in detention at the border. And our listeners, as we all are very concerned about that. But one listener suggested what his solution would be. The Red Cross has the buses that they take out to get blood donations. They're equipped to be able to rehydrate children, to take temperatures, and to, in other ways, check. If we could put pressure on the Red Cross to perhaps send those buses to the detention centers in the El Paso area, perhaps they could provide some minimal medical services to the children detained there.
Well, I don't want to get totally into that now because that would take an entire hour just to begin to break that surface, but many of these people have legitimate reasons to request asylum. And so why are we putting them through death's door almost to even get a chance to apply? That so many questions, but that's blood on our hands. Absolutely no doubt about it. And Aretha will have to say a little prayer for us. keep praying for all of us, Aretha. We need all the prayers we can get. And also, so many young people. And we emphasize kind of the young people in the show today, because to me, they are not only the future, obviously they are, but they have the courage, they have the passion, and they're saying it like it is. And this was a young woman I had the good fortune to interview earlier this year. She's just a fantastic young teenager down University of Miami now. She's studying in oceanography, and she is dedicated to try and be saving our ocean waters. And her name is Delaney Reynolds, and she's part of the lawsuit, actually, where a bunch of young teenagers are suing the EPA, literally, for what's happening to the environment and their futures. And Delaney is just an extraordinary young woman. I suggest you go to her website, spend some time there, because she is bright and she is passionate. And let's just hear a little bit from Delaney Reynolds. I'm just going to put this little one on because she's pretty amazing. Okay, let's give a listen to Delaney.
Impacting my community right now, but I found a way to fight back. My name is Delaney Reynolds, and I live in Miami, Florida. I first became concerned about climate change when I learned about the king tides. I saw flooding that was up to my ankles or my mid-calves. So I decided to research and learn as much as I could about climate change. And then I asked myself, what can I do about this problem? So I went to classrooms and schools to educate other children about what I had learned, the science of climate change, and most importantly, the solutions. Kids get it. We understand that smoke pouring out of a factory changes our environment. And that's why I'm suing the state of Florida, because they failed to protect our environment. But I wouldn't have to sue if we had the right people in office. That's why I support leaders who take climate action. This year, everyone that I know is a voter. This is our year.
Indeed, this is our year, and they made their voices heard. And Delaney is pretty amazing. She has been fighting for the environment since she was like 8 years old. She is amazingly talented. She's also a very good artist. And at 8 years old, she's really upset what's happening, you know, to the seagrasses and some of the little, you know, the bottom feeders, you know, right at the shoreline. So she did her own little book for, you know, to try and get kids to know what happened. And when she was all of 16, she actually testified before the Miami City Commission because she realized that there was nothing, not one penny in their budget that they were giving, even recognizing climate change and the tremendous danger to, you know, shoreline erosion, etc. So this is Delaney at 16, and she is testifying. We're just going to hear a little bit of this to the City Commission. And so let's give a little listen here to Delaney.
Go to Palmer Trinity School in Palmetto Bay. I'd like to comment on the budget and sea level rise. As I drove here, it was raining. And as it rained, I imagined that there were millions of raindrops falling from the sky. In fact, there probably were. And as I thought about coming here, those raindrops were a metaphor for your $6.8 billion budget. And I thought to myself that just one of those drops is equal to the small amount of money which you are allocating in the budget towards mitigating sea level rise. First, there was little to nothing. Then, $75,000. And I think I heard today about $300,000 were allocated. I'd like to suggest that that's not enough, that our community and environment deserve more. And in fact, I respectfully ask that you increase this line item to $1 million, and certainly nothing less than $500,000. What I've not told you yet is that I am the founder of an educational initiative related to educating children about sea level rise, entitled Sink or Swim, my website being miamisearise.com. And that through my work with this initiative, I can tell you that children, future voters, and their families, current voters, are deeply concerned about sea level rise. I implore you to show the world that Miami-Dade County is serious about sea level rise and dramatically increase your expenditure in this year's budget. We need to stop talking about it and start taking action to work together to address the catastrophe that our community faces. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Tell me, when have you ever testified before your city commission? And have you got that kind of passion that you're willing to fight for it? Well, luckily, we have so many young people who are. And I'm very encouraged. And so you have been listening, actually, to WMNF in Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio. This has been From a Woman's Point of View. And we've been kind of looking at issues of the year. And Arlene, did you want to add anything here?
Well, I would just like to say that I hope people saw the recent Time magazine cover that honored the students from
Parkland.
Yes. my brain failed me for a minute there, sorry. But it was a beautiful cover, and they're just one example of the young people that are standing up and doing something. Also, I'd like to say that the Florida Aquarium announced that the Girl Scouts of West Central Florida has accepted the Florida Aquarium Skip the Straw Challenge, an effort to reduce the use of plastic straws and single-use plastics. The Florida Aquarium and the Girl Scouts of West Central Florida also announced the intent to create a Girl Scout challenge patch centered around environmental and wildlife conservation. To accept the Skip the Straw Challenge, organizations and Floridians may choose from a variety of actions, including educating others, promoting and spreading awareness on social media, eliminating plastic straws from their restaurants or cafeterias, or personally deciding to skip the use of plastic straws. For more information, you can log on to flfloridaaquarium.org/skipthestraw.
Yeah, let's go out with Aretha. Have a happy new year, people.
Happy new year.